Welcome to the IVF Journey with Dr. Michael Chapman, the podcast for couples who struggle with infertility and want to fulfill their dreams of becoming parents. In this podcast, you'll learn actionable strategies to deal with infertility from Dr. Michael Chapman, or Prof as he's affectionately known. Prof is the co-founder of IVF Australia and is a leading Australian infertility specialist who has helped over 3,000 couples realise their dreams of becoming parents. To access previous episodes packed with ideas, solutions and tips that actually work, head over to Dr. Chapman's IVF podcast on iTunes. You can also ask questions by contacting Dr. Chapman's rooms on 1-800-111-483 or by emailing him, michael.chapman@ivf.com.au.
That first cry of a baby born after the long journey of IVF remains one of the most beautiful experiences in the world. As an obstetrician and an IVF specialist, I've had the privilege of experiencing this over many thousands of times in my long career, but I still remain moved by each baby's first cry. It signifies the end of a long journey and the beginning of a new life. This is Professor Michael Chapman, co-founder of IVF Australia and host of the IVF Journey podcast. Thanks for tuning in. To access all the previous episodes, head over to my website, www.theivfjourney.com, and select IVF Journey Podcast from the navigation menu. You'll also be able to find the various services that we provide at IVF Australia. Hi there. Our topic we're going to tackle today is the drugs that we use on the IVF journey. The goal of the IVF journey is obviously a baby, but to maximize the chances of getting that baby, we have to make the body respond abnormally. Normally, the woman produces one egg a month, and there are mechanisms built into the growth of the various eggs that lead to the selection of one good egg to be carried through to ovulation. Although at the beginning of every menstrual cycle, there are actually somewhere between 5 and 50 eggs that could grow forward if they were stimulated properly. And it's that stimulating it properly that we achieve with the drugs that we use in IVF. The standard drug that we use is follicle stimulating hormone. Now, that's actually a replica of what nature produces in the brain and is released in the early part of the menstrual cycle to stimulate that one specific follicle. But by giving artificial FSH, we can overcome the controls that the ovary has to produce one egg and end up with multiple eggs. The multiple eggs then allows us to fertilize them and then select the best possible egg to produce a pregnancy. That process moves the natural rate of conception, which is only about 15% per cycle with one egg, up to 30% to 40% by putting back only one egg that's formed one embryo that's got through the processes of fertilization that has demonstrated itself to be a viable embryo. And so it's got a much better chance than the one egg that is released in a natural cycle. So that hormone, FSH, as I've said, is similar in structure to that that's naturally released in the body from the pituitary gland. Initially, in now going back 40 years, that drug wasn't really a drug. It was actually FSH that was distilled from postmenopausal women from their urine. Because when women go through the menopause, their pituitary gland produces much, much higher levels of FSH in the circulation. It then falls over into the urine, and the urine contains high levels of FSH. And so by distilling that down, drug companies were able to produce FSH formulations that could then be used in IVF. That process is in fact still used to produce the cheaper form of FSH. Initially, we were concerned that it was contaminated, but now with high purification techniques, we avoid any concerns that we may previously have had. There's never actually been any case of mad cow disease, for instance, arising out of the urinary products. In Australia, we still do use one urinary product called Menopur, and it works very well. In the 1980s and early 90s, genetic engineering came of age. And what was able to be done was that cells that were grown in the laboratory could be engineered to produce FSH hormone. And so we had genetically engineered FSH, and that's the vast majority of what is used today. Certainly in Australia, the market, probably more than 90% of the market, is with genetically engineered recombinant FSH. You'll know the names if you've been through an IVF cycle already. That's Gondolef, Puregon, and most recently Benfolar. They all are equivalent. None has an advantage over the other. There may be patient differences in response to the medications because they're all slightly different in their chemical structure. But overall, when we use those drugs, it's basically the same chances of success. The medication dosage can be a complex decision that your doctor will make. He'll base the dosage with a goal of getting somewhere between 8 and 15 eggs. From our research, it seems that the best results in terms of pregnancies come with that number of eggs. Unfortunately, women are unpredictable, and even cycle to cycle, there is unpredictability. The first cycle that we have of IVF is, to some extent, a guesswork, although there are things that we do take into account to try and get the dose right. Age is probably the most important parameter. The older you get, the higher the dose of medication you need to get the numbers of eggs that we would consider to be ideal. The second thing we take into account is a woman's weight. You need more hormone if you are heavier. The third, and increasingly used because it appears to give us the best idea of how much FSH we need, is a hormone called AMH, anti-Müllerian hormone. And almost certainly, if you're embarking upon the IVF journey, your specialist will have measured the level of that hormone. If your hormone levels are relatively low, indicating a reduced number of eggs in your ovary, then a higher dose is indicated. If, however, you have very high levels of the AMH hormone, you will need a lower dose of medication than average. What we are trying to avoid at the top end is the risk of overstimulation. Overstimulation, or ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome, is probably the most dangerous side effect of doing IVF. These days it is very uncommon, in part because we're better at picking the right dosage for a particular woman because of the AMH level, but probably more importantly, as we'll talk about later, it's the choice of the final trigger injection, which can virtually avoid all cases of OHSS. So that first decision on what dosage of FSH to use is something an experienced clinician does best. So once we get started with the injections, which normally start on the second day of the cycle, we monitor the response of the ovaries using ultrasound and bloods, and you'll come back for two or three of those before your ovaries are going to be ready to give up their eggs when we collect them. In the most common cycle that we use in Australia, we use a second drug introduced on around day five of the cycle. This drug is called an antagonist, a GnRH antagonist, and its job is to stop your own pituitary gland from releasing the hormone LH, which could set off the process of release of your eggs, of ovulation, before we can get you to theatre to actually collect the eggs. So it gives us control of the ovulation process. So GnRH antagonists start on day five, and you'll have daily injections of those together with your FSH injection going all the way up to the day before we collect the eggs. Neither FSH nor the antagonists have any specific side effects related to the medication. The side effects that women suffer during an IVF cycle almost always relate to bloating and tenderness in the ovaries as the number of eggs that are growing in the ovary expand. That's not the drug's fault, it's the effect of the drugs that produces those symptoms. The other drug that we sometimes use in a different type of cycle, and until the last 10 years was the majority cycle, was called an agonist, a GnRH agonist. It works in ultimately in a similar way of suppressing the pituitary gland, as does the antagonist, but is required to be started in the cycle prior to the one in which the stimulation is going to occur. It's called a long protocol. It's highly effective and probably no different in most patients from the antagonist in terms of success rates. Some doctors continue to use the agonist style of treatment because it's been successful for them over many years. But as I said before, over 85% of cycles in Australia are the short cycles using antagonists. The next drug that you will be provided with is the single injection that triggers final maturation of the eggs and potentially ovulation. This trigger injection mimics the natural surge of hormones that's produced by the pituitary at the time of ovulation. This is predominantly in nature the hormone LH, luteinizing hormone. And its job is to stimulate the egg to reduce its chromosome number by half, so that when the male sperm comes along with its half of the set of chromosomes, they form together to form a full set of chromosomes. That process only occurs in the last hours before an egg is released. The other role of that surge is to switch on progesterone production from the ovary. And progesterone is vital in preparing the lining of the womb for accepting an embryo 5 or 6 days later. The third function of that surge is actually to start the process by which the follicle that holds the egg, the little sac that holds the egg, it needs to rupture to let the egg out. And the surge of hormones makes that process begin. Obviously, when we do IVF, we don't want that final rupture to occur. And so we always go to egg collection before the expected time of that rupture of the follicles. In nature, that timing is around 40 to 44 hours. That is why on your IVF journey, the nurses will be telling you about taking your trigger injection 36 or 38 hours prior to the egg collection itself. So we get in before nature has its effect of releasing the eggs. The standard trigger injection is HCG. Ovadril is the name that you'll be familiar with if you've been through a cycle. And that hormone mimics the effect of the natural LH surge. When you hold that it's time to have the trigger injection, it's actually important to ensure that it is taken at the time nominated by the nursing staff, because the risk otherwise, if the injection is given too soon, there's a risk that by the time we get to theatre, we will have lost the eggs. So it's very important to take it at the right time. There are certain situations where we use a different medication to trigger the process of natural LH production from the pituitary gland. In situations where we are worried about overstimulation, we use an agonist trigger called, so Lucrin or Cinerol is used. Decapeptyl has just recently come on the market. And their job is not to directly impact on the ovary, but to impact on the pituitary to make it produce a natural LH surge. We don't use this all the time because one of the consequences of using this approach is that the lining of the womb will decay very quickly because the hormone response in the ovary is suppressed. The progesterone levels fall very quickly, the estrogen levels fall very quickly, and the lining of the womb is not suitable for transferring your embryos. What we do in that situation is to freeze all the embryos, grow them on until they're 5 days, and then freeze all the embryos. In our laboratories today, that freezing process results in pregnancies at exactly the same rate as fresh cycles. So there's no need to worry if the doctor decides to use the Lucrin trigger or the agonist trigger that you're going to have a poorer cycle.
The outcomes are identical. The only difference is that you will have to wait another month to have the embryo put back. Going back to a standard cycle, we will have given you the trigger injection. You will have had your eggs collected 36 hours later. Your husbands will be put together with the eggs and the embryos will be grown in the laboratory for 5 days. But the medications aren't over for you. What we want to do is ensure that the lining of the womb will be in its best possible state to accept the embryo when we put it back. And we do that by giving you progesterone. In the vast majority of cases, this is done with gel or pessaries into the vagina. You'll use those through the whole of the second part of the cycle. And once you are pregnant, some doctors may continue using the progesterone, although the evidence suggests that it doesn't make any difference to the long-term outcome. Because once you are pregnant, your hormones stimulate progesterone production from your ovaries, and pregnancy should continue without having to be augmented. So the progesterone, as I said, comes in a gel, which is crinone, or progesterone pessaries, which is supplied by the clinic. If there are not many eggs produced and the hormone levels are relatively low, some doctors use, instead of the progesterone pessaries, which obviously putting in the vagina twice a day can be very uncomfortable for some women. So some doctors use injections of HCG to stimulate progesterone production by the ovaries, in a sense mimicking what would happen later when pregnancies occurred. Some doctors give it every third day in the second half of the cycle. Some doctors just give one larger dose just after embryo transfer. There seems to be no difference in the effectiveness of these injections called Pregnal compared with progesterone pessaries. The risk, however, with the Pregnal injections is if the woman has stimulated well and has high estrogen levels and lots of eggs, the HCG can actually trigger the ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome, and therefore we avoid using it in that situation. So that's basically all the medications that you're likely to be provided with by your doctor. Hopefully those injections will take you down the IVF journey to an endpoint of a screaming baby. That's what we all want.
And don't forget that you can access all the previous episodes by going to our website www.theivfjourney.com and select IVF Journey Podcast from the navigation menu.
Thank you for listening to The IVF Journey with Dr. Michael Chapman, the podcast which helps couples negotiate their way through the IVF journey, all the way to parenthood. You can also ask questions by contacting Dr. Chapman's rooms on 1-800-111-483 or by emailing him michael.chapman@ivf.com.au.